Welcome to the Uncomfortable Truth podcast, hosted by the rock star of consulting, Alan Weiss. Be prepared to have your beliefs challenged and your behaviors questioned.
Welcome back to the Uncomfortable Truth. I am Alan Weiss, and this episode is what I would do to change education, both primary and secondary. And let me say in preface to this that I believe that every child who is not afforded equality in receiving an education is a future social liability in terms of unemployment or drugs or alcohol or suicide or crime. And so we need to provide every child with an equal opportunity for excellent education. So here are my six steps. Number one, we need to end the warehousing of children. Right now, we're operating on a system that's hundreds of years old, and that is chronology. Grades 1 through 12 in the U.S. And then there's a high school and a grammar school, sometimes a middle school, but essentially it's 12 grades. But some kids learn faster than others. It doesn't mean they're better. It doesn't mean that they are necessarily exceptional, but they simply learn better than others. Why not move them faster? Why hold them back in their learning? A lot of kids who don't do well in school don't do well because they're bored. So we have to end this warehousing of kids by their age and by what grade they're in. Now, socialization is important, but we can socialize kids the same way as we put them in the proper environment, which is merited by their accomplishments. So we move kids as they learn, and we measure learning by outcomes, how well they apply the learning, how they do on standardized tests, and so on. When I was in grammar school, we had two different classes for each grade. Fourth grade had 4G1, 4G2, and so forth. And they gave the best teachers to guess who? The students which were in the more advanced class according to their testing results. That cheated the kids who were in the other class, and it didn't create equality at all. My second step, stop defaulting to college educations. We should prepare kids for a range of employment opportunities. We need all kinds of workers in this country. Morbidity is outracing fertility. We have a labor shortage, blue collar, white collar, whatever collar you want to name. And I sat next to too many duds in college. Kids who just shouldn't have been there but were getting their tickets stamped. And when they got out, they were no better than when they got in, except they were 4 years older. Some of them five, some of them six. We also need to teach life skills. We need to teach civics, how government runs, what voting's about. We need to teach them the management of the financial accounts, their personal accounts. We need to provide for do-it-yourself repairs. Some of you might remember shop, which primarily boys took but girls could take it, and home economics, which primarily girls took but boys could take it. They taught skills like woodworking or sewing. There's a growing tendency in the country, in any case, to hire competence and not credentials. A lot of airline pilots are being hired now because there's a shortage without having had to have acquired a college degree. They need to know how to fly, take off, land a plane. I think that's fine. I don't need to talk to my pilot about, you know, Nietzsche's philosophy. Now, number three, buckle your seatbelts. We need to end the teachers' union's control of the schools. And what they have is a lock grip on the schools. We have to introduce carrots and sticks for teachers. There has to be reward for excellence. There has to be punishment for mediocrity. New York City actually has what's called a rubber room. And this is a room where teachers show up every day who are charged with crimes and delinquency and other things that take them out of the classroom but can't get them fired. Some of it's pedophilia. Some of it's porn. Some of it's cheating. Some of it's inappropriate relationships with students. They continue to collect full pay. But to collect full pay, they have to show up in this room and put in 8 hours a day. And so they read books, they do crossword puzzles, they get their full pay. They're not in the classroom, and that's just obscene. Albert Shanker, who was the tyrannical ruler of the teachers' unions for a long time, was asked once why the union never put ahead some kind of innovation or incentive or movement, some motion for students. He said, because students don't elect me. Teachers elect me. If students can put together an initiative to elect me, then I'll put through initiatives for them. Right now, the president of the largest union is Randy Weingarten. She makes over $600,000 a year. The average teacher in the United States makes $60,000 a year. That's a 10-to-1 difference, folks, and we complain about that in industry and business. And by the way, a lot of teachers are making $45,000, $47,000, $50,000, which qualifies them for food stamps in their states. And when in a couple of states, like West Virginia, the teachers got out on the streets and protested what was unfair pay, it wasn't the union that organized that. That was a grassroots movement where the teachers said enough and the legislatures folded. But the customers in the education system are the parents and the kids, not the teachers. We need to make the teaching job rewarding, but also demanding. We need to recreate open houses in schools where parents come in and meet with teachers at night when parents aren't working. The teachers have stopped doing that. They don't want to do anything extra. If there is anything held, it's during the day when parents can't get there. We need to end the mainstreaming of behavioral problems. Teachers should not have to put up with kids who have emotional problems and run rampant in a classroom. I don't care how many aides are present. We need to end the inclusion of non-English speakers and put them in certain and special classes until they are somewhat fluent in English. But putting kids in a class who can't speak English at all isn't helpful. It's dysfunctional. I had an experience once, now this is in a university of Rhode Island, where every once in a while, once every 2 years, a professor asked me in to do a class on innovation for her students. And 1 year, she introduced me in advance to a kid who had Tourette syndrome. Wonderful kid. He said, look, what you're seeing now, and there were grunts and arm movements and profanity, which is symptomatic of Tourette's. He said, that's what you're going to see in the classroom. He said, I wanted you to know. I said, okay. And sure enough, that's what happened. And during this program, occasionally the kid would interrupt with something he wanted to say, but occasionally he would just interrupt because he couldn't help himself. And the rest of the class understood and they put up with it. And when we were done, I said to the teacher, to the professor, how much learning in this room is being sacrificed by having to tolerate that behavior? And she said, probably 20%. We're probably 20% slower than we should be. However, she said, the class is learning to live with someone with these disabilities. I said, yes, but at what cost? Teachers, you know, have the lowest grade point averages in universities as a profession, and they attend some of the worst academic schools there are. The former president of the University of Rhode Island, for whom I had done strategy work, and I asked about this teacher situation, told me that people with poor finances and or poor grades often go to inexpensive and mediocre schools where they don't incur large debt and where they're not put to the test in terms of achieving certain grades. We have to get rid of failed progressive nonsense like new math. And we need to allow for school choice of all kinds, with vouchers or however we do it. Parents should be allowed to choose the schools the kids go to because all schools should be excellent. And we need to provide that. And this leads me to point four. We need to change school financing. Right now, there's an affluent/tax/attraction/more tax trap. Affluency, tax, attraction, more tax trap. And what happens is cities that have good property and high value homes have high tax rates. The high tax rates fund better schools, that is, higher teacher salaries, better properties, better resources, better equipment. So more people want to go there and pay the high prices for these houses, which starts the cycle all over again. We need to pool money within the states for equal distribution. We shouldn't reward affluent communities with the best schools and penalize less affluent communities with the poorer schools. As I said earlier, everybody should have equal opportunity to an equally excellent education. So we need to create that equal opportunity with equivalent resources across states. Number five, we need to enforce discipline. An assistant principal right now might go to jail for stopping a female black student from heading for a fight that she claimed she was going to get into. And when he stopped her, he put himself in front of her and they actually touched. She claimed he physically abused her in doing so. Principal was Latino, is Latino. Yet she had threatened this fight, had threatened mayhem, but she claimed abuse, and now there's a court case where she's suing, and the principal might go to jail for 5 years. We need to mandate school officers. This nonsense that kids are worried and fearsome and put in a bad state because they see somebody in uniform. I think they'll be worried and fearsome and in a worse state when they see somebody shooting at them or threatening them. So we need to bring order and discipline back to the schools. And number six, we have to apply common sense and avoid political correctness and the woke. Teachers should not be able to involve themselves with personal, sexual, gender, and similar issues without involving parents, including the names kids choose to use in school, how they dress, how they want to be addressed. A teacher has no right to create that kind of relationship with a student without informing the parents of what's going on. Teachers' personal politics, gender beliefs, and religious beliefs should not be permitted in classrooms. Now, I'm talking about primary and secondary school. Some of you are wondering, well, what about college? Well, I'm already 11 minutes into this, so right now, don't ask. But good luck if you've got kids who are or will be attending primary and secondary school. Heed these warnings.
You've been listening to The Uncomfortable Truth with Alan Weiss. For free access to Alan's newsletters, audio and video resources, and for information about his global events and coaching communities, please visit alanweiss.com. Thanks for listening. Keep the faith.